Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. Thanks for being with us as we start the week in the Gospel of Luke. And this is kind of the crux of the story. Oh, that wasn't, I didn't do that on purpose. Sorry. This is the high point of the story. As we have seen Jesus on trial, now we see the narrative move to the crucifixion. And a couple of interesting things today. Read partly through this, and then we'll stop and have some discussion. As they led him away, Jesus, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming from the country, and they laid the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. A great number of people followed him, and among them were women who were beating their breasts and wailing for him. But Jesus turned to them and said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and your children. For the days are surely coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that have never been opened, and the breasts that have never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do this when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" So maybe break this into two parts. Both of these parts are somewhat unusual in the crucifixion narratives in the gospel. The first is this character Simon, not a character that we know much about, a character that doesn't appear in all the gospels. Maybe only in Luke. I don't know, Michael, if you have that there, but it's possible, I think, maybe only in this version of the story. And that has intrigued people. One of the ideas is that perhaps Jesus has been punished to such an extent that he's not able to physically carry his own cross. And when the Bible says that, here's what we think we know. You would typically carry not the entire cross, but the horizontal beam that would be carried to the place where the vertical beams were already standing. Again, I don't know if there's consensus on that. That is generally understood to be the thing. So I don't think Luke is probably telling us that Simon is carrying the entire cross, more likely the cross piece. But for whatever reason, we have this character in this story who does this for Jesus. Again, sometimes thought to indicate that Jesus is physically, having sustained abuse and beating throughout the evening, not able to do that for himself. If there's more to that, I'm not sure we know what it means. There are some church legends about Simon, but I think biblically speaking, he's one of those characters that kind of steps into the spotlight, fades out of the spotlight very quickly, and leaves us with more questions than answers.
Yeah, the gospel writers are different, Clint, than other storytellers in that they are not interested in introducing the backstory of all the people included, that they don't include people for that reason. And I think we have another example of that here today. Simon of Cyrene comes into the story for just a short moment as a way of helping Jesus forward. But let's not miss that within just a few sentences, just a few words, Jesus is going to turn to teaching in the midst of this struggle. So if he is having this cross carried because of physical weakness, because of the beatings and the suffering that's already happened, at the same time, his mind is clearly sharp. He's still clearly a person of great individual strength and resolve. And that tension, I think, is living in a text like this, that Simon is going to be forced against his will to carry the load that Jesus can't carry. And yet at the same time, Jesus is carrying a load that no one, including Simon, can carry. There's just this very deep, dense kind of interconnectedness of all these different elements in a story like this.
So one of the things that might be attractive to Luke about a detail like this in the story, my study Bible here says that Cyrene is a place in North Africa. Luke would like that. Luke would like the idea that a sort of not exactly a foreigner, but certainly an outsider, someone from far away, has been involved in the Jesus story. And then there is that kind of physical representation here of carrying your cross. Jesus has said that, carry the cross. Luke might like that imagery and have been drawn to that part of the story, the idea that it is a kind of sermon illustration for those of us who will try to make sense of and follow the gospel, that this man from a different part of the empire, a different part of the known world, shows up in the story. I think, Michael, that Luke would appreciate a detail like that.
Well, 100%. I do think it's helpful, the commentators point out, and this is a good word, I think, for us, this idea that we have that they are forcing Simon of Cyrene. We have that idea that they're seizing him, is the translation we have. That seizing is the exact same word that Jesus uses when describing the call of what it means to be a people who are going the second mile, as you have in Matthew chapter 5. The idea that we're called to carry the cross, once again, to use that language. And I think here, there's not just historical recollection in the inclusion of a person like Simon of Cyrene. I think you're right to point us, Clint, to the reality of that more geographic kind of connotation, the idea of someone who might not be considered to be part of this circle in the salvation story is included. But I also would point out, the church that's going to carry this text forward is going to be one for whom, in some cases, the idea of carrying the cross is not symbolic to them, that they understand the weight and the cost of being Christian, that it might cost the same exact penalty that it cost Jesus. It might cost your life, and your life might be the witness. And if that is true, then they can look to someone like Simon as a person who was there for Jesus in his darkest hour. And there's a real human connection to a person like Simon in the midst of the story. That's not one-to-one, but I think that those themes are theological and they're intended to be in this text. It's not just a what happened story. It's a what does this story mean?
Yeah, Luke is a careful writer, and if he introduces us to a character like this, it's probably for a purpose. I'm not sure we fully understand that purpose, so we take some guesses at why it is that Luke gives us this information. Perhaps the early church was familiar with Simon. Maybe he went on to have a story that was well known in their circles. Sure. Whatever that is, we're not entirely sure. The next part of the story is something that's going to sound a little familiar if you've been with us for the last couple of weeks. Jesus has said some things like this before. Luke likes these themes or feels that these themes are very important. And so we have here Jesus being followed by a group of women who are wailing, who are grieving, mourning. And Jesus says, "Don't weep for me, but for yourselves and children." And then we've seen almost identical language to this. The days are coming when you'll hope you're not pregnant, when you'll run to the mountains, when there's terrible things happening, when you'll rather have the mountains fall on you than face the reality of that day. And then Jesus ends with this verse, "If they do this when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Probably something along the lines of, if they do this to the Son of God, if this is how they treat the Messiah, how bad will it get in the days to come? How bad will it get when I'm not here? And that sounds maybe like a sermon, Michael. Maybe that sounds like just a thing the Bible would say. Those who are a few years after these events, reading Luke, they have answers to these questions.
Yeah.
How bad will it get? Well, it will get bad enough that we hide in the catacombs and we're afraid of the Colosseum and people are getting put on crosses or burned or beheaded. This is, as foreign and strange as this may sound to us, the early church would have read these words and resonated with them in a way that I think is hard for us to understand.
Clint, let's put this in perspective here for just a second. Jesus is unable to carry the cross, and he's on his way. He's being followed by women who are crying out, who sense the injustice of this, but also the oncoming grief of what is happening to Jesus. And when Jesus turns to them, what he has to say is, don't weep for me, but weep for yourselves. Weep that you had children. And this is such a reversal upon everything that we have in the Old Testament. That in the Old Testament, if you were with us in the Genesis study in particular, the idea of barrenness comes up over and over and over again. And the answer to barrenness is God will make the miraculous happen. That there will be this miraculous birth. And so God's blessing is seen in having children. In other words, these women who have children are already blessed. They've been given the best blessing that one could ask for in this cultural milieu. And Jesus is saying, you should be weeping for yourselves. And this is strong, strong language. And I think, to your point, Clint, we struggle to connect with the absolute severity of the upheaval that will happen in Jerusalem in 70 AD. And if you don't know, in just a few years after Jesus' death, Jerusalem, which has always kind of been a tinderbox, does burn, and Rome comes in and just destroys the city, and it wipes out the temple, and the prestige, and all of the things that have been rebuilt are essentially destroyed, and there's death and there's destruction, and it shapes the life of the people of Israel for the rest of history. And the reason I bring that up is just to say, when Jesus looks ahead, when Jesus prophetically sees what's going to happen, Luke's made it clear at every juncture of this book that Jesus does have that foreknowledge, and he taught that throughout his entire ministry. In this moment, on his way to the cross, Jesus is so much the Son of God that he's revealing what is going to happen to the chosen people, and he's instructing these women on what is the best way forward for them and their own spiritual practice in the days to come while he's being taken to his crucifixion. This is what makes a story like this, Clint, I mean, I think so Jesus in its telling, is because one could imagine writing the story of Jesus being taken to the cross, railing against the Roman Empire, or even railing against the religious leaders who have tricked and connived and pushed him into this position. No, when Jesus is in this moment, he's saying, it is way better for me on my way to crucifixion than it will be for those who have rejected me, and for those who are going to actually carry the faith, to your point, those who are going to carry the faith forward and experience real trials and tribulations. The hills that you would look to for protection are going to be the things that you would wish come upon you. The forebodingness of these words has a way, I think, of wrapping the reader into the story. Luke is making it clear to us that as Jesus goes to the cross, there's more at stake than just one man's life. And we know that because we've been following the story of Jesus, that Jesus is the person upon whom history turns. But on his way to crucifixion, Luke is telling that story. Jesus is teaching that reality as he goes.
Yeah, and I think we'll see another glimpse of this maybe tomorrow, another talking point. But the early church truly understood that the death and resurrection of Jesus ushered in what they would have called the last time or the last days. And so, again, Jesus has this kind of apocalyptic language, this end-of-time language. You know, the wood is green, but it's going to get worse as that day draws near, as the day of the Lord comes, as the day of wrath comes, as the second coming gets closer and closer, all of which the early church expected in its lifetime, in its near future. it's going to be worse than this. It's going to be bad. And again, this isn't new language. We've seen it. It's interesting that Luke, I would argue, more explicitly connects it with the cross than do the other gospels. You could kind of argue Matthew, the earthquake and the people getting up out of the graves. But Luke inserts it in a way that is just impossible to miss. I mean, this isn't inference. There's no interpretation really needed. I mean, this is not hard to find. It, Luke puts it right out there in front of you, and it's in Jesus' words, a warning that there's worse to come, that as bad as what they might be doing in the moment is, that believers will share in some of that suffering and some of that persecution. And the early church would have not only heard that intellectually, they would have known it experientially.
We have, is it the benefit or the struggle? I mean, I think it may be both of time, Clint, that we don't see the way in which the earliest church was embedded in the Jewish community. And when a Christian went to church in 65 AD, it's likely that they were going to the synagogue. And it's likely that they were worshiping and serving in the midst of those traditions. And so when Jesus makes a prophetic claim like this, which is so harsh, it by definition touches both the insider and the outsider, the believer and the non-believer. I think there's a way in which that this, what Jesus is talking about, it points the people to the reality that the brokenness that's going to put him on the cross is only going to become magnified. It's only going to become greater. This idea, what will happen when it's dry? And that is a very, very dark, foreboding kind of teaching. And, you know, we're now into the region, Clint, of last words. We're not quite there yet, but we're on the way. That this is one of Jesus's last recorded teachings, as told by the gospel writer Luke, is it's not accidental, and it's powerful, and it's moving, and there's substance in it.
Yeah, no, it's literally the last thing he says before the words he'll say on the cross. Yeah.
Well, friends, it's deep. There's a lot. We certainly hope that you will continue with us. Clearly, we slow down as we come into a text like this, but there's a great deal to see as we go. So I hope that you will subscribe to stay with us in the study, like the videos that others help. Like the videos that others can find it in the midst of their own study in the future. And of course, we look forward to having you with us tomorrow.
Thanks, everybody.